down, loaded up and trucking. Are we gonna do what they say can't be done? We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound, just watch old Bandit run.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Thursday morning. Once again, text line, time permitting, 251-343-0106. And just in case you missed it, coming up on the program tomorrow, Todd Stacey from Alabama Daily News, State Senator Chris Elliott, our returning champion and a guest to be named later. We will figure that out probably sometime after the conclusion of today's program. But always what you got to do, twitter.com or x.com / Jeff _ Poor. And what we'll do is we will post to the page the guest lineup. So make sure you check that out. But joining us now on the line, always a pleasure. He represents the 6th Congressional District, won his race on Tuesday night, but Congressman Gary Palmer is with us. Congressman, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Jeff.
Hey, thanks for coming on. We always appreciate it. Well, we'll kick it off here, Congressman. Real simple question. Just were you surprised by the way Tuesday night sort of came together?
A little bit. I think it was surprising that he not only breached the blue, so-called blue wall, he tore it down. But I talked with one of the Trump guys the day before, and he had given me a little insight into things. He told me that the two previous campaigns that Trump ran in the early voting in Nevada, he never finished ahead prior to Election Day. And the day before the election day, he was ahead by 43,000 votes in Nevada in the early voting. So that kind of told me that this was going to be different.
Well, and, you know, the media, the polling was always, and this is three elections in a row, Congressman, and it's almost, they don't know what they're doing. I mean, I don't think it's necessarily election tampering or anything like that. Maybe it is, who knows, but look at it like this, like maybe the real swing states in America aren't the blue wall or Arizona, Nevada, Georgia, North Carolina. Maybe it's Virginia, New Hampshire, Minnesota, New Mexico even. But, you know, that if it, given the right Republican and the right resources, maybe those are places that could go red. That's what it looks like to me. If you get the right campaign in there, running for president, the sky is almost the limit.
Well, I think on the polling side of things, they've been off really badly on the presidential side. They've been off on House races as well. And I think people just are not interested in talking to a lot of these. I don't think there's a whole lot of manipulation because I know some of the guys who are conservative, and they're not trying to manipulate it, but they're missing it too. As I talked with some of the Trump campaign folks along the way, they were very optimistic because their internal data was showing them information that's different from what the pollsters were getting. And I don't know how you evaluate one set of data points versus another. The other thing too, though, and you hinted at this a minute ago, is about the amount of money that if we'd had more money in some of these races, particularly the House races, I think we'd already know that the House majority was going to stay with the Republicans. They literally outspent us, Jeff, anywhere from 3 to 4 to 1. And I'll give you an example out in California, Michelle Steele's district. 2 weeks before the election, they dropped in $4 million on that race.
Well, I mean, I find that the little, I guess the right way would be, it seems a little underwhelming, the House results compared to the Senate and the presidency. And I mean, I think you lost a few seats in New York State, right? Because of the Zeldin.
Plus three.
Yeah. And then obviously AL2 here, which is not a plus three district, D plus three. It's much more than that. We were sold a bill of goods on that. and then just some other places, and it's hard to make those up. So I mean, are most of you and your colleagues operate on the assumption that Republicans will keep the House?
Yeah, I think 90-something percent that we'll keep the House. And one, I've heard estimates anywhere from 221 to 224. But I'll give you another example of, you know, the big money went to the Senate, but the Democrats put a ton of money. They literally had freight trucks loaded with money that we didn't have. But in Maryland, there's a guy, a Republican candidate named Bill Parrott, who is behind by 300-something votes, and he didn't get any funding. So I feel like that was a race we could have won. There's another one in California, Scott Powell, running in the governor's seat, and he's actually ahead. And he didn't get any money. So we had to be very selective about where we were investing in these campaigns, because we just didn't have the resources the Democrats did.
Well, and, you know, you got to look at, like, the Democrat resources, Congressman, even though they outspent, I don't think, they didn't get much out of it. And to me, it just looks like, and I don't know if we'll ever get, like, the correction here, but these people putting money back in these Democrats and their ideas, it's beatable even with double the resources.
Well, we don't have to have as much money as they have. We just have to have enough. But I tell you what I really think happened here, because most people, I don't know if people would have been surprised that Trump won Pennsylvania or Wisconsin, but I think they were, the Democrats were shocked that he won Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, and I think he's probably going to win Arizona. I don't know about Nevada. There's still 950,000 votes that have been counted in Arizona. And then he won the popular vote. So there's no question he's got a mandate. Someone asked me, what do you think happened? I said, I think the Democrat Party has become the party of the extreme, and we're not an extreme nation.
Well, and I, you know, Congressman, like all this culture war stuff, I think matters. And this is why I'll believe it to my grave, that the reason why they didn't have a Democrat primary is they would have gotten somebody way more left wing, like a McGovern-ish type of nominee, leaving it to Democrat based voters on the ballot. They would have gotten beaten even worse than they got beat Tuesday night. I just think it's in the DNA that we reject, like, this European style socialism, democratic socialism that a lot of people want to impose on the country. We reject some of the gender fluidity, the ideology stuff. I mean, all of that put together, it ought to be much easier for Republicans to win in the eyes of the American public. But, you know, like you said, it's just getting the dots connected and getting the right things in place to really build what you need to build.
I talked to Andy Biggs this morning in Arizona, Congressman Andy Biggs, and I think the most underreported thing about this election is the impact of the transgender positions that the Democrats took. I mean, Kamala supports using taxpayer money to pay for transgender surgery for prison inmates, including murderers. They were pushing it in our military. I don't think the average person fully understands how that undermines our readiness in our military, because you go through those surgeries. If you signed up to serve for 4 years, you won't even get out of rehab before your service time expires. And then having transgendered men in women's sports and allowing them to use the same restrooms as their women. I think that is, if they ever really do an honest analysis of what happened in this election, I think you're going to find out that that really drove down turnout among people who typically would have voted Democrat, and I think led a lot of them to come over and vote for us.
joined by Congressman Gary Palmer here on the program. Congressman, looking forward, new Trump administration. I mean, I know we just barely got out of the election cycle, but I mean, you look back to the first Trump term, the first Trump election win, and I think we had a little bit of a celebration that lasted too long, and they really weren't ready for what the tracks that the outgoing Obama administration was laying for it. What do you think that looks like? I mean, you think the Trump guys are kind of ready for whatever's thrown at them going through this transition?
I can give you absolute assurance that this Trump administration is going to be ready to start to work day one. There's probably close to 400 or more already people that have already been vetted for positions within the White House. The last time around, you know, President Trump had good people in his cabinet, had good people in terms of, you know, high intelligence, high character people. But Jeff, I think you know this, that you've got to know how to work with the other branches of government. And it was very difficult, and they really weren't sure on the policy side what they wanted to do. That is totally different now. This group, America First Policy Institute, basically was key members of the Trump team that went over and formed this think tank, and they and it's headed up by a woman named Brooke Rollins from Texas, whom I've known for 25 years. She ran our think tank out of Texas. They are ready to go to work. I think we're going to have an opportunity on the House side, the Senate side, to sit down with them and pretty much move as one body to start addressing the things like the cost of living, securing the border, getting the regulatory regime and the deep state under control. Those are the things that you're going to see right at the very beginning.
I mean, this is in your wheelhouse. And I'm assuming you are, I guess, still vying or still planning on keeping the role as the policy chairman for the House Republicans. But this is, I assume, what you've already been considering.
I eat, sleep, and breathe it. I tell people that my idea of fun is reading a brief. But it's I've been talking with some of the Trump team early on in the campaign about what we need to be doing on energy policy and critical minerals. Had a long conversation yesterday with one of the president's senior economic advisors during the campaign about a number of things. I'm ready to get to work, whether I'm policy chair or just a member of the Energy Commerce Committee. It doesn't matter to me. I think we need to be past all that stuff and just buckle down and get the job done. That's what the American people expect. And if we don't deliver, I think the next election is going to be pretty rough.
Well, how much of an undertaking is it going to be to try to unravel some of this deep state, administrative state bureaucracy that was always a thorn in the side of Trump? It continued to plague him even out of office, but is highly charged, politically used. I mean, they are in some ways thinking of themselves as the masters of the universe. They're unelected bureaucrats. That's going to be a tough one, at least me looking from the outside in.
One of the most exciting things that I've heard is Trump willing to utilize Elon Musk to look at a major realignment of the federal government. And, you know, businesses go through, they bring in outside people to evaluate business practices, to restructure things. We've never done that with the federal government. And I think this is an opportunity to bring the federal government operations into the 21st century and really rein in the administrative state. And that's one of the things that I really want to be involved in. I've got some ideas there about things that we can do that I think make a lot of sense. And we're running antiquated data systems. We've got way too many people. I think we need We don't need all of these agencies headquartered in Washington. They need to be closer to the people and where they're actually focused, whether it's ag or energy or and raise some serious questions about whether or not we actually need everything that we've got right now. Because so much of what we have was, you know, predicated 100 years ago.
Well, it seems like we have evolved and for the better as a country, but the government's still kind of stuck in this, you know, like this antiquated way of thinking, and that's always been the gripe. It's just like every time we elect Republicans, nothing seems to change. I'm somewhat optimistic, but you also got to temper that by just knowing how hard it is to really change the culture of Washington, D.C. Is that your view of it? I mean, it seems like a heavy lift.
Well, here's one of the frustrating things for people is, and I get this a lot, I'll have people stop me at church, and I had a guy stop me one day, and he said, you need to do this, 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 and this. And I said, well, you want to make sure we follow the Constitution? He said, absolutely. I said, well, about half of what you just told me you want me to do is unconstitutional. We have a system of government that our founders intentionally designed to be slow and inefficient because they don't want government that just can come in and change everything overnight. We have got to make this work. The House and the Senate leadership and the White House have to be on the same page, working in very close coordination with each other in order to get these things done. There's some of these things that we're going to pass out of the House that we're going to struggle with over on the Senate side because we have the filibuster, and I really don't want to give that up because we're not always going to have the majority. And if they had the filibuster, if we hadn't had the filibuster this time, they would have packed the Supreme Court. So we've got to figure out what our top priorities are and what we can get done through a process called reconciliation, which means they can't filibuster what we're doing. That's how we got the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act passed. And make those our priorities, get that done, and then try to win the public's support behind these other measures. And one of the things that I think we can do without going through the reconciliation process is finish the wall. It got to the point that Kamala herself was saying we need to build the wall. Now, nobody believed her. But you've got Democrats in the House and Senate that now they're going to have to either work with us to get the wall built or they're going to have to stand with someone who just lost a historic loss in a presidential campaign.
Guys, we got to leave it there. We're a little long, but thanks for hopping on, and best of luck to you, and we'll talk again soon.
Well, Jeff, I always appreciate being on with you. You ask great questions and do a great job.
You're very, very, very kind. Congressman Gary Palmer there, who's won his re-election bid Tuesday. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.